Sam Bankman-Fried has been sentenced to 25 years in a federal prison. While odds of him serving the full sentence are in question, many are wondering what life will be like for him while behind bars. Will it be like Orange is the New Black, or will his experience be more like a white-collar country club? Today, we welcome another Sam to the show, Sam Mengel, to discuss his experience in federal prison and what SBF's experience is probably going to be like. From one who's been there, telling us all about where another is going. Listen in closely, but don't drop the soap. On this episode number 720 of the Bad Crypto Podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
Who's bad?
Have you ever heard the prison referred to as the calaboose, Travis?
The calaboose?
Calaboose.
Never heard of that?
Yeah, no. I did thesaurus.com. You got the brig, the slammer, the hooscow, the pen, the pokey, the cell, the stir, the can, the tank, the dungeon, the joint, the guardhouse, the stalag, the labor camp, and don't forget the Bastille.
I know why they call it the pokey. It's because somebody dropped the soap. Oh, not the pokey. I dropped the soap today in the shower, and I was like, oh, no. I was like, good thing there's nobody around.
It's when the hokey pokey really is what it's all about. And you got you don't want to get pokeyed in your hokey.
You don't want any of the okey, especially if you're in Okey, Oklahoma.
I'll tell you what. This is, first of all, welcome everybody to the Bad Crypto Podcast. Very little crypto talk today, but the talk centers around a crypto personality, a larger than life personality, who's going to be doing time for the billions of dollars that he cost investors. Sam Bankman-Fried is going to prison. And we got this email like the day after the sentencing that this gentleman, who is a consultant to people that are going to federal prison about, you know, how to help with your sentencing and how to, you know, when you're in behind bars, how to best function within that. This guy did time himself. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's perfect timing. We got to have this guy on.
Yeah. Fascinating interview. So you might want to buckle in for this one, because it's unlike any other bad crypto that we've done up until this point, I think, especially the topic wise. So I think you're going to enjoy this little convo with Mr. Sam Mengel.
Sammy is heading to the clink. He's going to be in the hooscow, and he's going to be in a federal prison, and we have no idea what that's going to be like. You know, after seeing as many TV shows and films as we've seen, we certainly have our suspicions, but we thought we would talk to somebody who not only can tell us what it's going to be like, but who's been there himself. His name is Sam Mengel, and he's a federal prison consultant. He helps white collar offenders prepare for incarceration, and he spent 2 years in prison himself for doing something. We're going to find out what, but now he's regularly on TV and in the media. He represents high profile clients, and we're going to hear all about it today. Sam, welcome to the Bad Crypto Podcast, where we will not be talking crypto at all today.
Perfect. Nice to meet both of you.
Excellent. So let's start here. What did you do? What's your story? How did you end up doing time?
So 2016, it was April, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I heard a knock on my door. Just moved down to South Florida, and I look outside, opened up the door, and there were 17 men and women in the navy blue FBI flak jackets holding guns. And I opened up the door and I thought, God, it must be the wrong address. Maybe, you know, you're looking for somebody else. They said, Sam Mengel. I said, yes. Grabbed me by the shirt collar, put me up against the wall with a gun, and handcuffed me. I said, you know, there's got to be a mistake. Nope, no mistake. Toward my house. My wife was in the shower at the time, pulled her out of the shower, and took me up to the courthouse in West Palm Beach, where I was charged with one count of wire fraud. I owned a large insurance brokerage entity through 2012. My responsibility, I was the owner of the company. Things happened there that shouldn't have happened, and therefore, I accept responsibility. 2 years later, I was in front of a judge in Philadelphia. After being promised by my attorney, you're getting probation. There is nothing wrong. You are fine. First-time offender. Remember, the prosecutor stood up, recommended probation. And the judge, my turn to talk. The judge said, do you have anything to say? Yes, Your Honor. Foolish of me, I didn't do it. This is silly. And yet I accepted a plea. Absolutely not, I had no form of contrition. I didn't accept responsibility. I was far from humble. And I just remember the judge in Philly looking down at me and saying, Mr. Mangal, you clearly don't understand what you did. You were no different than any vagrant on the street. 20 minutes later, said, I'm doing something I rarely do. I'm sentencing you to 60 months in federal prison. I thought he said six. And I looked down at my attorney, last time I looked at my attorney ever, and he wrote 60 on a legal pad and circled it three or four times. Then the judge said, no one can leave the room, and you're being remanded to the custody of the Bureau of Prisons. As far as I knew, minimum, white collar offender, you get time to turn yourself in, and I get to choose where I'm going. Absolutely not. I turned to my wife, and I thought I was going to be away for 4 years and 2 months. 85% rule, serve 85% of your time in federal prison. Marshals came, took off my cufflinks, my belt, my wallet, my shoelaces, shackled me, and walked me to the bowels of the Philadelphia Detention Center. And this is where I can kind of understand where Sam Bankman-Fried is going through right now and where he's been. And I remember after spending an hour in a hole with 19 other people that were just taken off the street. Some were clearly strung out on drugs, and it's a federal facility. Going up to my floor and carrying my bedroll, and a guard said to me, "That's your cell. It's a real cell with a door that shuts behind you." And there was a young fellow in there with two teardrops on his eyes, and he looked at me, and the first thought he said, "Are you a child offender?" Because no white collar, white, small Jewish guy gets thrown into federal prison or remanded into custody. Highly unusual. And I thought, that's it. I'm going to die right here. And we're sitting down. After 30 minutes, somehow he found out I was not a child offender. I didn't know that people in detention centers and jails had phones and iPads. And he said to me 30 minutes later, I never met a Jew before. And the only thing I could think of saying was, well, that's funny. I never met a gang member before. And I couldn't stop the words from coming out of my mouth. And I thought, for sure, that's it. I'm going to die on the spot. And all of a sudden, he smiled, his gold teeth are showing. And he said, we're going to get along just fine. 6 weeks later, and again, I'm in the Philadelphia Detention Center, which is the worst of the worst. It's where Sam Bankman-Fried is. I've got clients who know him in the Brooklyn MCC. 6 weeks later, I was told to pack up, didn't know where I was going, put me on a bus. 2 weeks later, I showed up at the camp in Miami, where this was a camp. It's what I thought I was going to begin with. And I was out in 21 months. So 60-month sentence, out in 21. Could have been worse, but I learned a heck of a lot. And now I use that experience and understanding of a horribly punitive system to help people get through it. And it's a terrible system. I tell all of my clients, and I would tell this to Sam Bankman-Fried, probably CZ as well, who's going to be going through this. You're going to be okay. You're not going to Oz. You're going to a chance to a low security facility, not a camp yet, but as long as you follow certain protocols and everything, you will get through it. So that's my experience.
That's fascinating, Sam, going through that whole experience because, for one, 17 FBI agents knocking on your door. For one, that's going to make you go, what's going on here? Oh, damn. And now you're booked and now you're going down the river and all. And then I could just imagine like how pissed off you probably were sitting in court and you said you were less than humble. I can imagine you probably wasn't the most polite to the judge, which is understandable in a scenario like that. And judge is like, oh, really? You're going to go this route? Then, well, guess what? I'm going to do something I don't normally do. And you're going in there with Jimmy with the two teardrops, which
Right.
You saw the teardrop. Isn't that like every teardrop is like you murdered somebody or something? It's like
that was actually his name, I think, Jimmy Two Teardrops.
Well, he was there 30 years to life, a life sentence for dealing fentanyl. 30 years old. And what's interesting is this fellow grew up 15 miles from where I grew up in South Jersey, and we never would have crossed paths except in prison. And it's an interesting dichotomy of two people that you learn to get along with. You know, for him, it was somewhat comfortable. You know, he was given his three meals a day. He was safer than on the streets, which is, you know, what you see a lot in these camps. For me, it was scary. And you learn real quickly your P's and Q's. And it helped me when I finally got to the camp, where the camp was much calmer. You know, camp to community custody. God forbid there's a hurricane and they need people to fill sandbags in Miami. The camp sends their inmates there. So it's a different environment. For example, sandbag free will never, won't see that probably for the better part of at least 7 years while he makes his way through the system.
So what does describe, you know, when you're there in the cage, so to speak, what's it look like in this low security, white collar? It's not a country club.
No.
They don't feed you slop. It's not Shawshank Redemption, right? Give us a day in the life of.
So where he is now in the detention center is the worst other than transit. And I tell people for him to get, and I'm guessing, this is a guess, he's going to go to Lompoc, low.
Spell that.
It will Lompoc, Lompoc. It's just like Central California. For him to get from New York, where he is now, to Lompoc, I'm guessing will take him the better part of 6 weeks. Diesel therapy. Diesel therapy is where they put you on a bus, you're shackled, legs and arm irons in a jumpsuit, where you make multiple stops. So probably from Brooklyn, where he's, you know, where he's locked up, right, where he's locked up from, you know, usually 9:30 at night till 6 in the morning, closed behind the door. The next stop might be Philadelphia Federal Detention Center because the BOP doesn't do anything efficiently. You leapfrog from Philadelphia. They'll probably put him on another bus. He'll probably be in Philadelphia for a couple of weeks. Go to Harrisburg, where they put you on a plane to Oklahoma. Oklahoma Transfer Center is the largest transfer center for inmates in the country. It actually sits at the edge of a runway. He'll be there with all sorts of folks that are going throughout the country, probably for a couple of weeks, where they probably will then transfer him to Pahrump, Nevada, and ultimately he will be bussed into Lompoc. Maybe 6 to 8 weeks. It is miserable. You never know when you're moving, where you're moving to, highly uncomfortable. Once he gets to Lompoc, so certain low security facilities, the older ones, and I don't believe Lompoc is one of these, still have cells. And the cells are not like what you see in the background of your screens. There's a metal door with a little slit and a place where you can serve food if you're on lockdown. Other than that, two men in a cell, a little stainless steel toilet with a top that is used for washing your face and hands. Usually you can do 3 flushes per hour and a little locker and a place to sit. Maybe it's 6 feet wide by 15 feet long, with a little slit of a window. Most low security facilities are not like that anymore. Most are what's called open pods. So in an open pod, you'll typically see a 4 foot high cinder block walls separating usually 6 to 8 bunk beds in that pod where there are no bars or cell doors. You can actually leave the pod to go to the bathroom or showers. There's a kitchen area. A little rec area during the day and the televisions. So if he does go there and not to an older facility, chances are he will have that type of situation.
I was just doing some research to see who showed up, and Lori Loughlin showed up. I guess her husband spent time in Lompoc.
Camp.
For that college tuition fraud thing.
So it's funny. The first case I got, so I used to work for a different firm. And when I first came out of the camp in Miami, the firm asked me, would I be willing to speak to him? Because I was the most recent getting him into prison. And I remember the first question he asked me, which I felt was strange, was, am I going to be able to drink once I get the supervised release? Which was a really strange question for somebody going into prison to be concerned with. All the folks in the college tuition scandal went to camps. So a camp is different. Eventually, Sam Bankman-Fried will get to a camp, but you have to have 10 years, roughly or less, remaining on your sentence to be camp eligible. So camps are usually very wide open. They might be small, like almost dormitory-sized rooms, no door, 2 to 4 guys in there, or smaller pods. But it's going to be quite a few years before he gets there. I can tell you about Lompoc. I have a number of clients at the low there. I send a lot of clients by design to there. Most of my foreign nationals. So if you're a white-collar offender, that's a non-US citizen, you can't go to a camp because at the end of your sentence, i.e. CZ, if he is sentenced to prison, he's not camp eligible, which means he's going to have to go to a low because typically they place an ICE detainer on you and then you're deported at the end of your sentence. So Lompoc is one of the better lows, as is Danbury on the East Coast. But again, it's regulated. So while he is allowed out technically from 6 in the morning to 9:30 at night, there's a 4 o'clock stand-up count during the week. You got to stand by your bed, show your ID. There's controlled movement at Lowe's, which means you can't move from your dorm to rec or to the library or to the chow hall other than 10 before the hour until the hour mark. So you have 10 minutes to move. If you're caught in that 10 minutes someplace else, you have to stay there until the next controlled move. So there is greater restriction in a low, and he's going to meet some interesting people. Lows do house sex offenders. They do house violent individuals that might have made it down through the system from high to a medium to a low. They'll never make it to a camp, but they'll end up serving the last 20 years of their sentence at a low. Lompoc, Terminal Island in Los Angeles, are demographically more challenged than certain other camps. So they have a certain percentage of gangs, not necessarily violent, but you find that people tend to click up a lot more in that situation than you would at a camp. And he's going to have to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I look at this and I say, okay, Sam Bankman-Fried, he scammed, when you look at what he did, billions of dollars, right? He also funneled some of that back to some very powerful political people, right? So I was looking at this like, wow, he's probably not going to get much of a sentence realistically before all this stuff went down. And then knowing how his mother and his father were sort of tied in to what was kind of going on. Like you could see, if you dive down the rabbit hole, you can see there's some stuff going on that the parents sort of propped him up. And so he's almost like the fall guy. And so I would be curious about anything, you know, that's going to happen to his parents. But aside from that, I look at Sam Bankman-Fried got 25 years. Ross Ulbricht got two life sentences plus 40 years. And so, like, what's the method to the madness on how these things are even, how the sentences come down on these folks?
Ultimately, it's up to the judge. And I tell people a federal judge is truly a judge, jury, and executioner. They're appointed for life. They don't have to make excuses. Just like my judge sentenced me to 5 times greater than my guidelines. Judge Kaplan is known for being a more compassionate federal judge. She's an older, certainly very established federal judge in New York. And I believe in this case, he felt that, and I know people that sat in during the sentencing, that you have a young man that has his whole future ahead of him, and he didn't want to punish him for life. Look, he's going to be in prison for the next 17 or 18 years. And I can explain why it's going to be that amount of time and not 25, but that's a long time for a young man. And I think that at some point, a judge, a fair judge, has to decide, what is the appropriate punishment for an individual that is 31, 32 years old, that has their whole life ahead of them, but still was charged and found guilty of what, $11 billion of fraud? So there is a line that a federal judge walks between being overly punitive and harsh and being fair. He won't, Sam McAfee won't get out until he's probably 50. And even when he's out, in the BOP, there's in custody and out custody. So even when he's out, he's still going to be probably for about 18 months under the tutelage of the Bureau of Prisons, whether it's in a halfway house, which is not pleasant, or on home confinement with a monitor around his leg. He's going to still be in there for a period of time. And I'm guessing 18, maybe 24 months out custody. And he's going to be in his 50s. So, and he's forever going to have to report to supervisor lease, and then probably 3 years. And after that, for 20 years, he's covered under financial litigation unit. So he's going to be reporting and under somebody's thumb, probably for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I guess stories now are saying that he's feeling remorse now for his actions, but he's also said he didn't believe that what he was doing was illegal, and maybe just bad advice. So, how does somebody cope with what you, one moment you have your freedom, and the next you don't, and you know that in his, in your case. You're like, okay, it's going to be a couple of years. I can probably figure out how to cope with this, although days go on and on. But when you're going to be in there for a decade or more, what do you do? How do you mentally rearrange how you think so that you can survive and maybe thrive?
You want to be as productive as possible. When you're in a situation which is not meant to provide opportunity for you or activities or structure, you want to make yourself as productive as possible. So, as an example, where I was in Miami, the only person that I felt close to and talked to and walked with every night was Peter Madoff, Bernie's brother, a couple of years older than me, but a fascinating fellow. And inmates can teach classes at night. They're called sentry. They can teach classes to other inmates. So he might have taught business law, or physicians might have taught health for men over 50 or yoga. I think this is an opportunity for him to teach other inmates what he knows about crypto and about finance, and put his knowledge to use, not only to benefit other inmates, but to keep himself out of trouble. And I say that because he's going to encounter a lot of challenges because he's going to be in a low or a camp, which I think are going to be putting him at risk. And due to him having, his own personal challenges, I think he's going to be more susceptible. And I worry that that's going to get him either more time in prison, not additional necessary charges, but losing certain good times and credits, but could get him transferred to a higher level. Because the nature of a low and a minimum are, it's a wide open environment. He's going to see cell phones everywhere. He's going to see iPads everywhere, liquor and drugs. I understand that he's right now starved for the internet and communication that he can't have where he is. Although I have another client that's currently where he is now, and he calls me every day from his cell phone, which is mind-boggling to me. But in a low, I remember in the camp, there were 80 beds in my dorm. At night, when I used to walk up and back, to the bathroom, it looked like a lit up Christmas tree. 50 guys had cell phones and iPads. So he's going to see that. And knowing that he might not have a discipline, certainly as time goes on, to say no, or to say, the guy sleeping above him is on his iPad one night and FaceTiming his loved ones, or surfing the internet, or whatever he's doing. I think Sam McAfee is going to have a tough time saying no or distancing himself from that.
So to be clear, that's part of his sentence. No technology. Is that?
Well, it wouldn't be part of a sentence because you don't expect there to be technology in federal prison.
Right.
So,
Right. Yeah.
they're not going to say you can't have something that then it would force them to acknowledge is already there and they have a problem.
Yeah. Well, if everybody's if like 50 people, you're in a room with 80 people and 50 of them have a cell phone, it wouldn't seem like it would be too hard to like kick off Wi-Fi or to have one of those Wi-Fi or cell phone blockers just so the internet couldn't get out. I know I go to some, you go to a school sometimes and they shut it off. Why wouldn't they shut it off at a prison? That doesn't make any sense
That
logically.
unions, federal guards, federal unions prohibit, because if they turn it off for the inmates, it would also turn it down because of the proximity of everybody for the guards and the staff. So the unions say no blockers. That's a well-known issue within federal prisons.
But why are they allowed to have phones at all?
Not allowed to have. But again, so my example in a camp, my camp was right on a main road. My first Friday night of the camp, a guy came up to me and said, "Hey, Mango, I'm going out for dinner tonight. What do you want?" I said, "What do you mean? We just had dinner 2 hours ago." He
Right.
said, "Mango," and I was afraid because this is a 7'2", really built well guy, tattoos everywhere, had gold teeth, and I didn't want to insult him. He said, "No, Mango, it's Friday night. I'm going out for ribs and chicken, Chinese, or Burger King." I said, "Well, how do I pay you?" And he said, "No, have your baby mama send it to my baby mama." I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that term was. So I had to ask the guy above me, "What the heck's a baby mama?" I learned that. So I said, "All right, get me some chicken fried rice." Sure enough, 2 hours later, I see this 7'2", fellow coming in back into the unit carrying a mesh laundry bag, five pies of pizza. He came over. Oh, and he asked me what I wanted to drink. I said, "No, I have a soda." "Mango, it's a Friday night. It's beer, vodka, and Courvoisier." I said, "Come on." So he felt bad for me. I didn't want anything to drink. He brought me two Krispy Kreme donuts. So camps, many camps don't have fences around them. You want to leave, you leave. You're a fugitive if you get caught. In Lowe's, there are really no walls, or people throw things over the fences. Unfortunately, guards bring things in, and drones. Drones are constantly dropping things down into camp yards.
Wow.
So,
Well, at least that 7-foot-2 guy, when you asked what he wanted, didn't say, "Well, you sure got a pretty mouth, boy."
and I was afraid to insult him because I was afraid I was going to get stabbed. It's my first Friday night there, and this guy's, I mean, maybe he's setting me up. But when he came back afterwards and he handed me my quart of rice and he handed me a little brown paper bag, and I said, "What's in the bag?" He said, "Mango, you got nothing to drink. I felt bad. I got you two Krispy Kreme donuts. All right, I'm going to be just fine."
Man, that's crazy. So we all know, prison is very profitable, right? There's a private prison system. And so while you were talking, I was sort of going, wait a second. So we have these judges that are on the seat for life, dishing out penalties to people at their own discretion, right? Essentially. And what's to stop them from working with private prisons and getting their own, if it's on the down low, if they don't know, they're corrupt, judge, they're unfireable. Most people in federal government are unfireable, really, right? It's you get like a permanent tenure and you're there forever unless you want to walk away. And so I think prison, there needs to be some reform with it, because prison is so profitable. And so have you noticed any discrepancies in maybe how some judges are doing stuff or whatever? Because it seems to me like that could be a very big problem, because I don't like private prisons anyway. And then when these guys are staying on for as long as they are, then that seems like that could be a recipe for corruption, so they could make a little extra money.
So let me first explain. There are no private prisons in the federal system anymore. They did away with those maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
In Miami,
In
I
the
was with a
federal system.
judge in the federal
Federal
system.
systems. Okay.
In Miami, I was with a former judge in Pennsylvania that did exactly what you're saying. He was sentencing minors, children, to these private facilities and getting kickbacks from the facilities. He got a 22-year sentence. So the state system has private facilities. The federal system does not. Also, while a judge can recommend where a defendant goes to serve their time, ultimately it's up to Grand Prairie, the Bureau of Prisons, to designate that person based upon a number of different factors: distance from home, the length of their sentence, what programs you're eligible for. That's something we help with is designation. So they definitely have a Chinese wall between a judge and what they can do in the federal system and where the BOP takes over. The profit for all of that in the federal system is internal. So the inmates make the profit on the contraband. And the currency, which Sam Bankman-Fried's going to learn real fast, are stamps and packets of tuna or packets of mackerel. Things are traded internally. If you want somebody to do his laundry or make his bed or cook for him, because these are all things that happen in lower security facilities, it's got to pay them. And how do you pay them? Internally with currency, stamps and packages of tuna fish and mackerel.
So when their parents is going to put money on his books or whatever, right? Then he's going to go to the store or whatever it's called, and they're going to buy. He's going to buy these things and then utilize those as ways to barter.
Right.
The barter system coming back
He should
full
take
effect.
Bitcoin. That would be the
Yeah,
best thing he could do.
he should take
Is
some FTX tokens.
is there a prohibition from doing any type of enterprise? Not enterprise within, the prison selling to inmates, but for to build a business that can be growing in the real world.
You're not permitted to conduct business while you're inside. You're supposed to be rehabilitating yourself. Do people run businesses on the inside? Absolutely. Again, I work with CEOs and people that have ongoing businesses that were in for one thing, but they have a business to go back to. They run their business. They oversee it in a way which doesn't necessarily run afoul of the system. He can create a business plan. I guarantee there are going to be more people coming up to him saying, "Sam, look at my business plan." He's going to have a line of inmates that are going to say, "What do you think of this business plan or this business plan?"
Well, he's going to get a book deal too, guaranteed. He's writing his book while he's in prison. He'll probably get millions for that from somebody, some publishing house.
But it's going to be probably seized for restitution. Any proceeds will probably be taken. The other thing is, and this is an interesting nuance for people that other inmates suspect of having a pile of money hidden. And I saw this, with Peter Madoff. Inmates that come are very successful and might have hidden, people think have money stashed away somewhere. Other inmates will try to get them to either give them money in an extorting way, not necessarily violence, but they're going to think there's a pot of gold that he has out there, and they think they're getting out 5 years before him, and they're going to find that pot of gold.
Can he do a podcast from within prison walls? A prison cast?
So I have another client, as I mentioned to you, that is trying to arrange a interview now from prison. The problem is, unless you get approval from the warden, and it has to be done in the warden's office, they're very security conscious. They won't allow cameras into a federal prison like they do in state prisons. He can certainly use the prison phone. You're allowed 15 minutes per call. He can use that 15 minutes to call into a show and talk. He has to be careful what he says because it is subject to being monitored.
He wasn't
But
careful at all what he was saying.
no.
He was tweeting shit. Like I was like, dude, have you talked to your counselor about things like this? That's what's so weird. And the answer, Joel, would be if you're in the camp and you're in a pod, it would be a podcast. So they would still do that. Hey,
Totally.
check your signal. I just sent a message over, and we can share this on screen here. So FTX executives, they have settled this fraud lawsuit now, right? So we got Gary Wang, the FTX co-founder. And then you got Carolyn Ellison, the former CEO of Alameda. They have basically, it looks like they have at least, they have done something here to settle some stuff. So does it look like maybe they might be out of the woods as far as them potentially going to prison? Because it seemed to me like more than just SBF should probably be punished for this.
Look at the settlement amount, Trev.
Right.
1.35 million. That's the settlement.
Yeah. And a
As
class
it,
action lawsuit, tiny.
yeah. Yeah.
Here's the analogy I use. You walk into a bank and you rob them. An hour later, you realize you robbed them and the police put out an APB and you heard your name mentioned on the radio or on television. You decide you want to return the money. You are still being charged for robbery. So while I can't predict what's going to happen to the co-defendants in the case, they certainly, I know Carolyn Ellison did cooperate. I believe they will get downward departures, significant downward departures. I do not believe they will, in my opinion, they will avoid prison. Just due to the nature of the charges and the players involved, and the fact that it's extremely high profile, but they will get downward departures.
Speaking of high profile, before we started recording, you mentioned Peter Navarro, who was in the Trump administration. What's your connection to him? And he's off to prison now, right?
Yeah, so actually, I was standing directly to where he's pointing during that press interview. I was Peter's consultant. I still am Peter's consultant. I took him down to surrender at the camp in Miami. He and I speak regularly. I'm trying to help him, you know, navigate the next or the total 90 days will be there. And somewhat atypical surrender, I have to admit. You know, when I was dropped off at the camp in Miami, I was in shackles and I spent the first 2 nights in the shu because they didn't have my paperwork. When we dropped Peter off, he was, you know, met by prison staff and really walked through the system in a much more civil manner. So I think his experience is dramatically different than mine and will be dramatically different than Sam Bankman-Fried's.
It's fascinating how the system, you know, I talk to a lot of people and they just don't trust the system anymore. They don't think it works for them. They can see that there's the justice system and there's the just us system. Like some people create, like for example, Sam, like let's just go in and say, you know, like, you know, JP Morgan or something. They do some crazy shit. They basically do some stuff, manipulate markets, and they make billions of dollars, and then they have to pay a fine of like a couple hundred thousand, a couple hundred million dollars, right? You're like, well, dude, that's a cost of doing business for them at a certain point, right? And it's like, if nobody, like nobody really got in trouble for the 2008, you know, collapse of all the stuff. Nobody really got in trouble for that. You know, you start seeing political people who are on one side not getting anything happen to them. And then you can see people who are just kind of like Peter Navarro, who's just like, do, oh, he's associated with this guy. So boom, they're going to throw the book at him. It's just so, if you just step back and you look at this, and let's just say you're not even American, you look at this and you go, wow, this is very clearly they're politically prosecuting political opponents at this point, and it's not even remotely fair, right? So as somebody who does consulting and you're just helping people sort of, you got to deal with this, you got to deal with that. How does the system change? Like, what kind of solutions could we have to make it not be shitty for everyone who's not agreeing with the other side? It's weird.
So I often ask the question by people getting ready to be sentenced and they owe money. They have victims. And the logic is, it was my logic as well. Why would the judge want to put me behind bars and prevent me from earning a living to repay my victims? Wouldn't it be better for me to be earning a living, repaying my victims even quicker, as opposed to being a burden of the taxpayer at $180 a day to keep me there? Wouldn't it make sense for me? I'm a convicted felon. I will always have that. That's my scarlet letter. But wouldn't it be better for me to now, I don't want to use the term debtor's prison, but wouldn't it be better for me to repay my victims? I work with a ton of foreign nationals. And one of the first things that we discuss is treat or transfer, because what is a charge here, a crime here, or a sentence here is not anywhere close to what they would have encountered in their country, Canada, the UK, Israel, India, South Korea. So, do they have a fairer justice system when it comes to punishment? Probably. And that's why their goal is to get out of the United States system as quickly as possible to go back to their home country. But I think, at least, you know, I only represent white collar individuals. I don't represent sex offenders or violent criminals. And that's my choice. But if I had a choice as a victim of Sam Bankman-Fried, or any of my clients, and the judge would say to me, do you want me to send him to prison for 5 years or 20 years? Or you lost $100,000. If he's out, you might be able to recoup 25,000 of that over the next 5 years. Or how, what would you rather do? And yes, emotions are stirred up with victims. Everybody wants, you know, some form of punishment. But when you start thinking about it, is it better to get some of your money back that you lost? Or how happy are you that the guy's going to be in prison for 17 or 18 more years? You're not going to see anything. And okay, you got your pound of flesh, but you're still out of money. When people start to think along those lines, I think that, you know, you might see a different form of punishment for nonviolent white collar offenders. Maybe more non-custodial time where they can be home and working and paying taxes and being more productive to society. Because not only is he not going to pay back his victims, he's costing the three of us $180 a day for the next 17 years plus inflation.
Let me add this real quick, Joel. So FTX had all these assets. They've invested in all these startups, several of which I think are probably going to pop off. There's already a couple that are. They had a shitload of Solana crypto tokens, some of which they've just dumped into the market at a substantial loss, but they sold it for like $7 billion. Why is it that these victims don't get some restitution? It seems to me that most of them could probably be made whole over time. Why not?
Well, again, I think, and I'm not going to answer for Joel, but I think it's my understanding of the settlement of the collection that a lot of the victims are going to receive a substantial percentage, 50 or 70% of what they invested, not the appreciated value.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
And that's the disparity. So listen, yeah, if I put in 10 grand in 2015 and that 10,000 is now worth 35,000, I might get 7 of that 10 back or 10 of it back.
Dude, that's what happened with the Mt. Gox collapse back in the day. It's like, oh, you invested $200 and you bought 3 Bitcoin, but here's your $200 back. And I'm like, no, no, Bitcoin.
Congratulations.
What are you doing? Right. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy, bro.
So are Trump's people calling you for consultation? I mean, there's so much going on there.
So as a rule of thumb, unless the person's already been sentenced and given me permission to talk and mention their name, I don't. Suffice it to say, I have, especially since the interview I had with CNN and with Mr. Navarro, I have a substantial number of clients now in that world.
What Joel really wants to know is, can you get us some Trump sneakers?
You know, he lives about 21 miles north of me, and I'm an avid cyclist. So every, you know, Saturday and Sunday morning, I ride by and I go right by Mar-a-Lago. Occasionally, I see his motorcade pulling out when he goes to play golf.
It's only worth $18 million, apparently.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. It's got the most land of anywhere. And he's caddy corner, I think, to Ken Griffin, whose property is, I think, $200 million. And it's not built yet. So it's a spectacular property.
So this whole thing that happened in New York to him, like, you know, no victims to this so-called crime, just your personal opinion, obviously you're not a federal judge or anything, but let's say that he doesn't win the election and he's still citizen Trump. Is he ever going to do any prison time?
No, I actually wrote a blog about this. In my opinion, first of all, if he were to serve federal, and I can't talk state, although I think any governor would commute a sentence. If he were to be charged and sentenced, found guilty in a federal matter, I do not believe the federal government, the Bureau of Prisons, has the wherewithal and manpower to properly house him in a custodial environment, other than maybe in general's quarters on a military base, where technically he would still be, you know, confined or home confinement. Keep in mind, I think he's given, 21 Secret Service agents around the clock who are armed, and that is guaranteed to him unless taken away. I don't see that happening. A prison camp is a communal environment. You know, I had 80 people in my dorm. I what's it? They're going to devote a whole dorm to Trump and his Secret Service. They're not set
imagine
up.
Him walking around some federal with all of his Secret Service guards and stuff, and everywhere he'd go.
They're tremendously understaffed. I mean, the BOP is so understaffed right now, and camps get the least staffing because it requires the least amount of people from a custodial point of view. There's no way that he would be properly and safely housed in prison. If, and this is an extreme, and I think it happened to a vice president many, many years ago, or a secretary, if for some reason they wanted to house him somewhere, they would put him on a military base in a general's house where technically he's in custody. I don't see that happening. And I think it'd be a really bad precedent for that to happen.
A bad precedent for the president. So, Trev, any further questions about the big house, the cooler, the coop, the lockup?
Sam, it's Friday night. I'm going to go get you some chicken fried rice. Would you like wontons or would you like some crab rangoon? It's going to be fabulous. I'll bring back some donuts for you.
I'm telling you, the best key lime cheesecake I ever had was in prison. Oh, these guys make it. in a microwave or to cook things, they use an iron. Keep in mind, you have to tell them if you want your clothes ironed, not to use the same iron they use to make fajitas.
Oh my gosh, that's, you know what, as long as we're on stories here, as we close out, what's the scariest thing that happened while in your term, and what was the funniest thing that happened?
Scariest thing is I remember seeing a young kid overdose on some kind of drug, and I remember they closed off the section, but he was in the middle of the two units, and I saw him flopping around on the ground, turning blue. The staff was not permitted to touch him. That's part of the union rules. They called medical. By the time medical got there, he had already died. That was the scariest. The funniest thing was, you guys are familiar with dim sum restaurants. So every Saturday and Sunday morning, the guys who would cook in the dorm, because everything gets stolen from the kitchen. The guys used to come back into our dorm with 30 baked chickens in their clothes to sell into the unit. So every Saturday and Sunday morning, guys would walk around. They would make egg sandwiches, bacon, lettuce, tomato. They would make, you know, fajitas or cheesecake or apple pie. Now, these are things made either from stolen things from the kitchen or commissary, and they would walk around the unit selling it. And one guy would sell it for 5 stamps. So in that environment, and it'll be a number of years before Sam sees that, you just have to wonder, what the hell is the federal government spending $180 a day housing me there when I could have been paying my taxes and paying my victims? It's counterintuitive, and that gets back to how inefficient and ludicrous a lot of that part of our justice system is.
I'm going to say this, Sam, and for those of you who are tuning in, the next episode is going to be with a nomad capitalist, and you're going to find out why the U.S. passport is number 44 overall, and I think it has to do with the freedoms and how they've been taken away over time, and how, what isn't America now the most... there's most prisoners in a country, or percentage of people in prison or something. So
yeah,
not great. So you guys are going to want to tune into that next episode, because it really talks about some of this stuff. So we really appreciate you coming on, Sam. This was very interesting.
Yeah. The website,
my first podcast, it was good.
Sam-Mangel.com. You guys can go read all about, he is the federal prison consultant, the FPC. And if you want a free consult that is compassionate, personal, and expert, Sammy is the guy. I mean, does that look like a guy who's done time? I don't know. He doesn't look that hardened to me.
And when you put the hair to the chin, you know, you,
that's, you look like tough. The warden. You're like the warden. You're like, thanks again, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thank you both very much.
Captivity, internment, imprisonment, impoundment, confinement, incarceration, and bondage. Wait, I guess it's still bondage, but all those things is what Sam talked about today. And that was really a fascinating talk. The guy's very interesting. And there's nothing like hearing from somebody who's actually had the experience of what can be expected if you get convicted and are sent to one of these federal prisons.
Yeah. I gotta say, I would love some of that key lime pie. Nobody makes it better than on a pokey iron. I gotta say, no, it's just really strange, dude. You gotta think. I look at it, man. I look at the sentence that SBF got, and I immediately felt sorry. Immediately, my first thought was 25 years. Holy shit! And Ross Ulbricht got 2 life sentences.
Yeah,
40 years. I was like, I think maybe that's even an understanding of how crypto worked. Whenever they first started, they're like, oh my God, everyone using crypto is terrorists, right? And so hopefully they can do a revisit on Mr. Ulbricht, because my goodness, like, he got screwed, right?
Yep. Yep. Well, he's probably not going to get pardoned by the current, president. So maybe.
Well, not the governor in California either or whatever. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yep. Humanity is corrupt and definitely needs redemption. We're in a lot of trouble, gang. So keep your nose clean. Mind your own business. That's what that I say. And what you said at the end of that talk with Sam is very true. This next interview with Andrew Henderson of Nomad Capitalist is another winner. The guy is just chock full of information. I think we went an hour with him, and that's going to be coming up next week's episode number 721. So you want to make sure that you are subscribified and that you automatically download episodes so that one will show up on your device ready to put in your ear holes.
Yep, absolutely. And when we finished it wasn't on the recording here with Sam, but when I finished, it was like, it was great talking with you. We hope we never talk to you again.
Very true. He's a good guy. I enjoyed him. And you're right. I hope we never talk to him again.
And we hope you don't talk to him either. But what we do hope is that you continue to stay bad.
The Bad Crypto Podcast is a production of Bad Crypto LLC. The content of the show, the videos, and the website is provided for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes only. It's not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, or trading advice of any kind. You shouldn't make any decisions as to finances, investing, trading, or anything else based on this information without undertaking independent due diligence and consultation with a professional financial advisor. Please understand that the trading of Bitcoins and alternative cryptocurrencies have potential risks involved. Anyone wishing to invest in any of the currencies or tokens mentioned on this podcast should first seek their own independent professional financial advisor.
I don't know if you had anything else to say there, but I just said,
I got nothing else to say. You're like, I got to go poop or something. I'm going to end the show right now.
Got some other things I'm working on.
I need to go get a Chipotle or something. So I'm done. Done talking to you, Joel Com.
Done talking to you, Joel Com. Get out of here.
All right, I'm out.